here's what I want to ask you about. I sat in the office yesterday and I was thinking about this, and I thought to myself, okay, if you think about this logically, once a child is in a school and they're being educated in a school, if a school has constructed a contract with a retailer which basically says that that child cannot be educated any longer in that school because the school is party to dictating the price of the clothing that that child has to wear. Is that school possibly interfering with the child's legal right to an education? Is it a breach of their human rights? That's what I guess I'm starting to look at. What do you think? Yeah.
Well, Stephen, there's two issues, and as you say, it's not a new issue. And the Office of Fair Trading looked at this in 2006 and in 2012. In 2006, they were saying exclusive outlets were on average 150% more expensive than supermarkets. That concern prompted a senior director of enforcement in the Competitions and Market Authorities to write to all head teachers and governing bodies saying, we are concerned about this exclusivity of uniforms. And there, your procedures may be scrutinised under competition law. And a retailer with a local monopoly abusing their position on charging excessive prices may have enforcement proceedings taken against them. And they reminded head teachers and governing bodies that they must prioritise providing value for money. Now, the second aspect...
Who reminded them that?
That was the Competition and Markets Authority.
But how can it be value for money if the schools are refusing to let parents buy similar uniforms elsewhere, which are a fraction of the price?
Yes, and I think then the guidance that John O'Dowd references is explicit in that, and it says they must consider cost, they must consider the cost of containing it, or maintaining it, they must consider the upkeep. Cost is throughout that guidance as one of the key issues. And that's where your second point then in your question, it was in respect of does that affect the young person's human rights? And I think we've heard a lot of this morning about, you know, it's being a class issue. And it may be hard to mount a case on the class issue because if you look at the legislation that's in place for provision of goods, facilities and services, you know, education could be considered a service as well as the provision of uniforms. Discrimination is normally based on your gender or your sexual orientation, your disability or race. And obviously class or socioeconomic grounds is not in there. However, in European Convention, we've got Article 8, which is the right to a private and family life. And that would extend to the right to education. And the right to education is protected under Human Rights Act as well. So any refusal of admission or suspension or expulsion could be a breach of that child's Article 8 right to private family.
There's Article 14, isn't there, which is a right to education.
So discrimination.
Yeah, it's my understanding that with the Article 14, a right to education, that in order to challenge whether a child is having that right to education, you would have to look at one of the other article rights too. So what a lawyer may do is combine a child's right to education with the Article 8 that you talked about, a child's right to family life, and to say, hold on a moment, if a school is actually saying, we will send you home unless you go to our chosen supplier, by the way, that's pricing you out of an ability to put clothes on your back, so we're sending you home, we're not educating you. That would be a very interesting test case, wouldn't it?
And it's
staring us all in the face. Why hasn't the test case been taken by the Children's Commissioner or by the Human Rights Commissioner?
Well, if we set the case out, we'd say that are the rights engaged? As Article 8 and the Article 14 of discrimination, are they engaged? And we would say yes, because the young person is not getting the access to the education that they should. Then we need to look at, well, if the article is engaged, are the school interfering with it? And we're saying yes again, because if they're suspending someone or not letting them have the education, that absolutely interferes with it. So then the next question would be, well, can a school justify that interference? And we're saying no, it's not justifiable. And I think that's where the Human Rights Commission statement comes in on proportionality and how that would be questionable. Because I think a school would find it very hard to justify expelling or suspending or not allowing someone to, a young person to access a school simply because they don't have a uniform. And that's particularly true in times when we don't have a government or we've got difficult financial situations. Schools do not operate in a vacuum. They're there to provide for the community and they should be engaging with the community. And there's a very common sense resolution.
Enniskillen and Royal Grammar won't even tell us if they're using a sole supplier or not. They won't even tell us.
Well, I agree that that's unacceptable. And it is not, you know, again, the school is not secretive or is not there for gain. It is there to provide for the community. And there is parent representatives on the Board of Governors. And the Board of Governors should be having discussions in light of this story and the recent economic difficulties people may be facing, and ensuring that their uniform policy is accessible and that no pupil feels uncomfortable or discriminated
in terms,
because they can't decide it.
In terms, Kieran, of the law, and I know, look, this is just your opinion, okay? But you specialise in this area, but it is one opinion. But what is your opinion in terms of a possible defence for a school, which would be, well, look, we're not interfering with a child's education because if they can't afford our school uniform, they can be educated elsewhere in Northern Ireland. Is that a possible defence?
Well, no, I don't really think so. You know, a justification of, oh, well, you can go to another school that doesn't have a uniform is not acceptable because obviously when a parent picks a school, they just don't say, oh, we'll go to that one because it's close. They look at what's the educational attainment, what's the teaching standards like, do they have other siblings there? You know, so it is a very considered decision to take for parents. And therefore, that should be respected. And just because they don't have a uniform, that is not a justification for the interference.
And what about if the school isn't actually? Because the commissioner, the Human Rights Commissioner in Northern Ireland is saying, look, that if a child is suspended as a consequence of not being able to afford a uniform, then that could be a breach of human rights. What about if the child isn't actually suspended, but the school has backed the child into the parent into a corner with the threat of suspension?
Yeah,
is the threat of suspension enough, or does the child actually have to be suspended, in your view?
I think once education or once the provision of education is starting to be affected, that's sufficient. You know, there's talk, and I know the Children's Commissioner has mentioned previously, informal suspensions or isolation. And that's unfair treatment or less favourable treatment. Now, there is another form of litigation which we could say is in the county court for harassment. And that is normally, you know, where schools can be sued under harassment because for bullying usually. So the school hasn't provided a duty of care to the child and there's someone else bullying them. You know, if there's a teacher or teachers pursuing a course of conduct that isolates that child and young person and treats them less favourably, that may, under certain cases, constitute a form of harassment, and that school could be liable for that less favourable treatment.
So if there are parents, let's cut now to the real world, as in this year. Parents will be going out buying school uniforms right now. If there are parents who decide that what they're going to do is they're not going to go to the sole supplier, they're going to do their very best to find similar colour trousers at good quality, and they might get them at half or a quarter of the price. If those parents collectively decide to do that and send their children into that school, do you think that would be seen by law to be a reasonable attempt to adhere to a school uniform policy? And would the school be vulnerable if they then excluded the child for not going to their chosen sole supplier?
Absolutely. I think if a parent or a guardian of a child or a young person tries their best, you know, tries getting the uniform grants, tries getting other, does their best, takes reasonable steps and sends the child to school, then they have done everything they can. They've acted in good faith. If the school just then suspends, then I think they're on difficult ground. Now, obviously, I think we may polarise this. Obviously, there should be conversations. If there is an issue, the school should raise it discreetly, talk to the parents and see if a resolution could be reached. You know, I think sometimes as lawyers, we get bad stick that we just go off and run, you know, test cases or sue schools. Every case normally starts with correspondence, and we have been writing to the school saying, you need to reconsider this, and this is why, and we set out our case. So there should be informal conversations happening between
conversations have been happening for years.
And if they're taking no action, then move on to the next step of having either a lawyer or a solicitor or the Children's Commissioner or the Quality Commission write to the school and set it out. And if you don't get the positive response, then that is where you look at this test case and you look at a case coming forward.
Last thing, Kieran, and this has been very helpful this morning, so thank you. You know, we're talking here about a child's education, but sport within a school and activity and physical activity within a school is actually part of that child's well-being, is a formative part of whether that child, you know, that child's life expectancy, for goodness sake. And what some schools in Northern Ireland are doing, a significant number of schools in Northern Ireland are doing, is they're insisting that if you want to be part of a team, no matter how skilled you are, you've got to go and buy that sports top, and it be a branded top. And a branded top, of course, is going to be a lot, you know, some of the most expensive brands that exist. The schools are insisting that your parent buys that top.
Again, you look at what is the legitimate aim? Why is that top necessary or prerequisite for entering that sport? I understand some schools take sport very seriously, and there's rugby kits or types of uniform to go. You know, from my perspective, from my secondary school, when football teams were going out, the school bought the team uniform, and if you were lucky enough to get on the team, they got you a shirt. Now, I can see the reason why you need a unified uniform if you're playing a sport against other schools. But for PE internally, there is no justification for a particular brand to be worn around the sports hall or out in the front pass.
Let's speak to David Burgess this morning, who's chair of the Schoolwear Association, which represents uniform retailers and suppliers. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So just to be clear, is your association representing some of these sole suppliers, the appointed few?
I'm sure we probably do. We represent lots of retailers, lots of people who operate within the school uniform market, you know, not just retailers, but suppliers and cloth suppliers, embroiderers, lots of people.
So what's your reaction to what you've heard this morning?
Well, I think you have to be careful. I think most schools are very sensible in the process of deciding on a uniform. I agree with different things that have been said, not everything, of course, but different things in terms of a school should be thinking of the parents and the cost, but they've also got to think of the purpose of the uniform, and that we must never forget that why do schools have uniform, and what the benefits to the children. What happens normally is that if a parent is in the category where they're struggling, the schools have usually have a way of helping them. I noticed last week that it was announced in Northern Ireland that school uniform grants that the cuts to them will not go ahead, and those school uniform grants can help.
Those school uniform grants only provide for a fraction of the cost of the school uniform.
Quite possibly. I don't know what the cost of
it's a fraction.
Yeah. Well, in England, most local authorities have abandoned them altogether. But I think the key thing is every school should have that right balance of what we would call specific. So something that's badged, usually, or a very distinctive colour sometimes.
Yeah, but I can help us both cut to the chase here, David. How is it in the interests of parents for a school to insist there's only one supplier and for a school not to allow competition so that competition drives a price down. So for the same uniform, the exact same material, why should a school appoint just one supplier? How could that ever be in the interest of a parent?
Well, for the specific garments, as opposed to generic, I think, again, you have to be very careful. You've quoted some rather astounding prices, give an example of a pair of trousers, which, quite frankly, I think are wrong. But most schools do not insist on generic uniform being bought from a specific supplier. But, for instance, a blazer, which is perhaps the most important part of a uniform in a secondary school, the practical issue is that the supplier can then make sure that they've got enough stock to cover all the children who might want it.
The supplier's working in a free market. So why the supplier's also making a profit. So why can't that supplier compete with other people in the area on price and the parents benefit from that competition? This is like saying we all need toothpaste and therefore we're going to make sure that there's enough toothpaste in the country and we're only going to allow Boots to sell it.
Well, I am sure that the vast majority of schools, obviously I don't know what every school do, but we know over a long period of time that schools are run by people who try to make good decisions on behalf of the children.
But you're still not telling me. You're not telling me why it's in the interests of parents that 73% of those surveyed by the Children's Commissioner were being forced to go to a dictated supplier. That supplier dictated by the schools.
Well, I'm not trying to defend that. In terms of what the guidelines from the Department of Education say, is that the schools should consider cost. And usually, if they do appoint a sole stockist, they will have tried to make sure that that is as competitive a price as possible.
How can it be as competitive as possible by removing the competitive element?
Well, what you're saying is that there is no competition. Usually, if you go through a tender process, this is what is being encouraged more and more. There was an announcement now about 18 months ago by the then Chancellor George Osborne that they were going to make the guidelines statutory, and in those guidelines, currently they are to say guidelines.
Okay.
It clearly says you go if you wish to have a sole supplier, you go through a tendering process.
Well,
tendering process is where competition comes into.
We're going to try to establish. How do we know that any of these schools in Northern Ireland have actually engaged in a tendering process? We've written to a lot of them. I think we should write to every one of them, actually.
Let me say thank you, because
we have many calls to bring on, but thank you for coming on this morning. 0303 80 55 55. Let's clear the boards now and take your calls. Jim in Ballygolly. Morning to you, Jim. Morning, Jim. Eamon in Derry. Morning, Eamon.
Good morning, sir.
Go ahead, Eamon.
Last year, my niece required a new PE kit, and we live here on the waterside in Derry, but she attends school in Clawdy, which is 9 miles away. But the sole supplier of the PE kit is in Draperstown, so it is a 54-mile round trip to get PE gear.
So what are you saying to me?
What I'm busy saying is her parents were unable to go on that particular day to get the PE kit when it was required because of work. And I was the only one available, and I ended up spending 2 hours going for a 54-mile round trip to get our PE kit.
Really?
Yes.
Because it was a sole supplier?
Sole supplier.
Who was the school?
The school is in Clawdy, secondary school in Clawdy.
What's it called?
St Patrick's.
So this was for a PE kit?
PE kit.
St Patrick's were restricting the availability of a PE kit to one shop?
that is the only shop where I was allowed to go to buy her PE kit.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I felt a bit aggrieved, but you would do anything, of course, to make sure that your niece doesn't stand out any different to anybody else in the class.
So what would a parent do for that school who didn't have a car or who couldn't afford a 54-mile trip? Like, what do they do?
Well, they're definitely a bad case of supply. Being from a retail background, competition is the best way to ensure that the parents get the best value and the best supply.
Bartley, morning, Bartley.
Stephen, we've been talking 2 days of pure and utter nonsense. The whole point and principle of a school uniform is, A, that all the children look the same. One doesn't look richer or better than the other or poorer than the other. Now, if you start letting them buy cheaper clothes or clothes of different quality, then they wash different, they look different, and then the kids all start looking like liquids of all sorts. And then all of a sudden, the whole principle of the school uniform is wrong. But unfortunately, Donald Dowd's jumped the ship there.
When you say, hold on a moment, Bartley. There may be some validity in what you've said if it's different quality clothing, right?
Yes.
But why is the same quality clothing not available from more than one retailer?
Because they all buy from different sources and all buy from different areas.
But the school if you take this to its logical end, if the school can control the supplier, then the school could control two or three suppliers competing against each other on price.
Yeah, well, that maybe can be. But
it's not. But hold on a moment. It's not. It maybe can be, but it's not. So we currently have parents up and down Northern Ireland who are being told, you will not be educated, your child will not be educated in our school unless you buy that exact uniform from this exact shop. Well, and by the way, some schools might be getting a kickback for that monopoly.
Well, see, my biggest problem is the uniform thing. My biggest problem is the past 2 days of hearing the word of discrimination and equality from our MLAs, or I suppose MLAs, and different people here. Because my biggest problem is my kids and my grandchildren, we could afford, we worked and we could afford the uniform, so it didn't come into play that there. But my biggest problem is with the equality and discrimination. Before any of my children go on in the education, they're discriminated because we work. During their whole education, they're discriminated because we work. When they go to the higher education and the universities, they're discriminated because we work. That's where my problem is. Well, my problem is the kids get grants, grants for nothing.
I'll remind you, Bartley, that some of the people who can't afford a school uniform, they work too.
Yes, I appreciate that, Stephen.
They work too. And some other people who can't work through no fault of their own.
I don't think our country's like some of these countries in poverty, and I don't think we're just as big a poverty as people actually bandit about. I think if we go down the street, sir, on a Friday night or Saturday night, or you go down on a Monday, you see there's people spend money who's on benefits, spend plenty of it. And I might offend some people saying that, and it might be a bit, people think it's a bit arrogant, but when you work along and you go along and your grandchild goes along to go to a school and all of a sudden you find out that the preschool, she wasn't allowed to go because mummy is working. My daughter's working and her child wasn't allowed to go to a pre-nursery school because, and that's not right, Stephen. Oh, I believe that if we're going to have equality for all, not for some sources or for some people and punish the parents that's working. I'm speaking on behalf of people that's working.
Okay, Bartley, thank you. Paul and Ardoyne. Morning, Paul.
Morning, Stephen.
I'm just going to rush on here because we've 5 minutes left before
Stephen,
10.
The school I went to, the only source of supply for the school blazer was the headmaster's sister's shop. She had a haberdashery shop, and the only place you could get the school blazer was from her shop.
That was quite a long time ago.
It was a few years ago. I'll grant you that, all right.
Yeah.
But that's the truth. That's the way it happened. You had no choice. The only place it was available was her shop.
Paul, thank you. Patrick, morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Stephen. I also went to that school, but that's not why I'm ringing up. The question of school fees, the same people who can't afford school uniform are being asked for maybe 50, 60, 70 or even £100 at the start of this new term after shelling out for new school uniforms. I'm just wondering why the schools need to charge fees.
Well, that's a whole separate discussion, isn't it?
But it's related because it's still a poverty issue. If you can't afford to buy a school uniform, how are you going to afford to pay the fees? And what are the schools doing about it? If they're not charging fees for one person because they're poor, why are they charging other people?
Thank you. Someone here has contacted us and said, Stephen, I'm making this on behalf of my daughter. The Royal School Armagh has the same uniform policy. I'm a single parent. I don't know if I'm going to be able to continue with my child's education because this is so expensive. This is a massive thing for parents. George in East Belfast. Morning, George.
Stephen, I was a very lucky one because I went to primary school starting in 1948 and all my mother had to buy was a school tie and two badges. And she sewed the badges on the school cap and my blazer. But she could buy the blazer, my dark grey trousers, and my shirt from any shop she wanted.
And that's not as it currently is in Northern Ireland for many people now. John in Lisburn, morning, John.
Good morning again.
Go ahead, John.
Stephen. Good morning, Stephen.
Very quickly for me, John. Go ahead.
I'm just asking. You played a little bit of rugby at Inns, didn't you, when you were younger?
Yes.
Do you remember your sports shirt?
Yes.
Do you still have it?
Yes. Come on, quickly, because we have 2 minutes left.
What was on it?
Stop just asking me questions. Make a point for me.
Just the school colours. So you were talking a lot about branded items.
I can't remember. But go ahead, make your point for me.
The point is, it's only in the last 10, 15 years that it's become effectively almost a universal policy that school kit has become branded kit. Prior to that, it was a standard generic.
So why has it changed? Why has the policy changed?
That's what you need to investigate. Right. I'd also take an issue with the whole business, the report, the 73% of only single suppliers. I would say the vast majority of schools have three or four suppliers, particularly in sort of the larger
areas. The Children's Commissioner surveyed 1,006 parents and they found 73%.
Yeah, but if you survey 1,006 parents, who probably that's not drilling down into the actual objective.
It's a representative sample. That's what
it is. How do you know it's representative?
Because it's a representative sample conducted by the Children's Commissioner. I think we can respect the integrity of the Children's Commissioner to try to be able to do a representative survey.